We are back on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Marcus and Gibson saying this. Quinn Hughes in Vancouver can be subbed up by Andy in the office when he says, I wish there was a way to know you're in the good old days before you've actually left them. Enjoy watching Quinn Hughes while you can.
Yeah. Hey, nothing lasts forever, and don't ever take anything for granted.
That is good advice from one of the listeners, Marcus and Gibson's. You can always leave one of your comments at 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. I think it's just become a thing now.
Is that your thing now?
I don't know. Maybe it shouldn't be, but
definitely shouldn't be.
Wouldn't be the first time I've made up a word.
Definitely not.
Herocious. Yeah. All right.
Sure.
All right. We've got the pregame coming up after 4 o'clock. Canucks and Chicago Blackhawks, as the Canucks are trying to close out a 4-game road trip with a victory and get a viewing of Connor Bedard in this one. But before we do that, let's bring in our next guest. He has spent parts of 3 seasons with the Vancouver Canucks and finished his career here in Vancouver. Now one of the rotating members of the Missing Curfew podcast. It is Brad Richardson. Thanks for this, Brad. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty well. I guess our friend Obi has convinced you to come over to the podcasting radio world.
He has, yeah. We've talked about it for a couple of years now, and he's kind of been like, "Oh, if you ever get bored, you want to do something, you want, you know, whatever, come on over. We'd love to have you." So finally, the timing was good, and everything worked out. So I'm happy to be with those guys.
Yeah, we know that you dabbled in scouting and post career, trying to figure out what to do. Is this kind of what you're landing on for the time being, having some fun doing the media thing?
Yeah, you know, I worked for Calgary for a year doing some pro scouting, and I did enjoy it, and we had a great group of guys over there, and I did learn a lot, and it was a busy year. And I think for me, like I live in Scottsdale, Arizona, so when the Coyotes kind of left, you know, I have a young family, and being on the road for 15 days, 17 days a month didn't sound too appealing for me and my family. So I walked away right before kind of the season when I was doing my schedule. It just wasn't adding up. So I walked away, and then Opes called me like a week later and he's like, let's do it. So timing's everything, I guess.
Yeah. So now it's just like old times, chirping Opes on the ice, just with a microphone now.
Exactly. It's perfect.
you had a long career. You played parts of 3 seasons with Vancouver. You jumped on board for the end of that crazy Bruce, there it is, Bruce Boudreaux run a couple of years ago. How fondly do you look back on your time in Vancouver?
I really loved it, to be honest. For me, it was probably, especially the first, when I was there first, it was probably some of my best hockey I've played. And then, you know, moving on from there, getting to come back at the end of your career was pretty special. And, you know, for me, I knew it was probably going to be my last year. That's kind of how I was kind of mindset. This is it for me. And so to come there and get to play a lot and some meaningful games, it would have been nice if we could sneak in the playoffs. But, you know, I think we had a pretty good run there. And, you know, and there's some great guys, and there's some couple guys there from when I played. So it was a fun group, and always really fond of that city.
It was really interesting because, like Dan mentioned, it was the whole Bruce, there it is thing. And then afterwards that kind of fell apart. And we all know what a gong show the entire situation looked like from the outside. And after the year afterwards, when Bruce got fired and then Tocchet took over, now you look at this team, they made the playoffs last year, lost to Edmonton in second round in 7 games. Like, as somebody who saw the Bruce, there it is thing and kind of saw the last couple of years unfold, like, what was your view of the situation as all those things kind of happened over the past 2 years?
Well, you know, just when I was there, when it was happening, you know, you kind of, for me, I could kind of see this isn't going to last that long. It was kind of running its course, and it was getting to that point where you knew it was going to probably, you know, butt heads in some way, and it'd be probably a change. But, I mean, I like Bruce. He's a good guy, good coach. It's just, you know, I could kind of see it from my experience and being around, that was kind of end. But, you know, I've had Rick Tocchet for 5 years, and I love talk. So I think that change probably for that group was good. And I think their team's on the rise. I like their roster a lot. I like how they coach, you know, and when they get healthy and they get everything in place, I think they got a good team to make a run again. So, yeah.
you know, that season, I mean, obviously, you know, JT put up 99 points that year when you joined on for those final few games. The core is still intact. I mean, could you see the makings of a team that could potentially be a playoff contender, as we saw last year, and you know how they're viewed going into this season, even in the early goings?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely, you know, a contender. I think, you know, they've been off to an okay start. I wouldn't say amazing, but, you know, it's a solid start. You know, they're obviously, when you get your number one goaltender out, even though, you know, Blankinen, or I want to say his name probably, is played really well. But, you know, having your number one goalie out to start the year is not ideal. They made some good moves in the offseason. And I think one undercover, for me personally, one undercover move they didn't make last year was, you know, they were floating kind of Connor Garland's name out there. And, I think that would have been a dumb move. I love Connor as a player. I think he brings a ton of stuff off the ice as well as a character in the room. I think he brings a lot of on-ice juice to the team and a lot of hockey IQ. So, you know, having him, that I think, you know, there was a lot of floating last year. I don't know if you guys knew that, but
yeah,
that he was going to be moved. And so I'm happy they didn't do that as well. I think he brings a lot to that team.
Yeah, I mean, last year was right before the start of the season. It seemed like, you know, there was a not really a trade request, but certainly all parties were maybe wondering if a change of scenery was the best way to go. And it turns out, you know, the best course of action was keeping Gars here in Vancouver. And I actually had the take on the show yesterday that, you know, there's not really another player like Garland in the league, you know, because of his size, the way that he plays, the way that he goes about having success. Like, it's not because he's a burner, he doesn't have a big shot, but he's just, the way he has success, it's unique. Like, I can't think of another guy as small as he is. You know, it doesn't exactly have, he's not a stocky guy either, maybe like a Marchand. He just goes in and calmly wins every puck battle along the boards. It's crazy how Garland has so much success.
He is. I was just going to say, kind of a Brad Marchand-ish, not the dirtiness and all that other stuff that comes with it, but he has that same kind of mentality in corners where he's always coming up with pucks. It's how he's good at spinning off guys. I mean, I love Connor. He played, again, I played with him in Arizona, and he was just such a slippery guy to contain. He's got so many little fakes and footwork and stuff, and he's so small that I don't know, once in a while he'll duck underneath the checks and stuff like that on one knee. Like, he does little things, you're like, what the hell, but I think he just brings so much juice and energy to a lineup when he's playing good, and off the ice, he's quite a character too. He's always yapping, and he brings a lot of that energy off the ice as well. So, and then another guy I think too is looking, you know, be moved to is Hoglander, and had a great year last year. So it was nice to see him take a step too.
Yeah, and both kind of have similar traits and how they can bring energy to a lineup as well. And, you know, you mentioned you had Tocchet in Arizona, and every single person we speak to, Brad, they love Tocchet. We haven't heard a single person off the record or on the record say a single bad thing about Tocchet. What makes everybody love Tocchet?
I just think there's an honesty, and I think that you know where you stand with Tocchet. Like, you never was like, you know, we're sitting there guessing what's going on? Why is he not playing me? He was just very honest. If he had an open door policy, you had a problem, you go in his office, you talk it out with him, you know, and either, you know, you can say your side, he'll tell you his, and you try to meet in the middle on what's going on. So I just like it. He wasn't like, he didn't overteach, but he let you play, but he knows little things. He was obviously as well respected as a player. He was, you know, tough as nails, played the right way, could score. I mean, a guy that, you know, it's just, you know, I don't know how you wouldn't respect anyone if you can't respect him. But I love, one thing I loved about him too is, like, he's, you know, most coaches in the NHL, assistant coaches go on the ice before the practice and get to work in with the guys, you know, get some stuff done just before practice. Talk was always out there doing what the assistant coaches usually do. He's out there getting in front of the net, showing guys how to, you know, do little drills and stuff like that. Not sure if he's still doing it in Vancouver, but I wouldn't be shocked if he was. Most NHL coaches jump on 1 minute before the practice starts, blow the whistle, and here we go. So I kind of like that. He's always wanted to get the team better and wanted to help individual players be better as well.
Yeah, from what I've gathered over the years, just talking to players, like, the one thing guys want in a coach is somebody to be fair. Is that right?
Yeah, well, and you know, sometimes everything can't be 100% fair, but you just want the honest truth. You don't want someone kind of not telling you what's actually going to happen. And I think everyone at the end of the day in any business wants honesty and truth, even if it's going to hurt. You'd rather have it up front and know where you stand. So that's one thing with him. I love that he did that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we hear a lot about coaches and X's and O's, and it's true that obviously there are some coaches that are creative and come up with good angles, but generally most teams play a similar way. Is the biggest trait for a coach just their ability to get through to players?
You know, I think you said that every coach is kind of a little different, and I think the best coaches are the ones that be themselves. You know, and you try to come in and be something you're not. I think it's gonna show, and the players aren't gonna believe it. But the best coaches I can say, I've had a lot of really good coaches that they were just themselves, and most of them just let you play. You know, they show you, you know, things that are they're the standard and they have to be done. But outside of that, play your game, don't overthink, and you know, and just that's it. Be creative. So, and obviously there's, you know, like a guy like Tortorella, who, you know, in Vancouver, he was my favorite coach probably, but just the standard, you know, the work ethic's got to be there. That's not even, but you're allowed to play. So I really, really enjoy those type of coaches.
It is Brad Richardson joining us here on Canuck Central. What do you remember that four goal game? That was wild. We'll never forget covering that game.
Well, I remember I hit two posts, so it could have been six.
Could have been six.
Yeah, it was one of those weird nights, and I was my girlfriend, her family all came in town from Wisconsin as well, so they had never seen a hockey game. So I got them, there's like 15 of them. They have never seen a game in their life, so they're like, you know, we go to dinner the night before, and they're like, you got to score a goal, you know? I'm like, okay, easy, guys. Like, and her brother's like, you got to get three. I'm like, are you out of your mind? So obviously dinner goes on. You know, we separate, go a certain way, you know, go home for the night. They go to the hotels, whatever. And then I get them a box. You know, one of the guys had a box. He's like, hey, take it for the game, and, you know, your family can have it because there's so many of them. And then I score four goals, and they're like, oh, my God, they're going crazy in the box. And then they're like, you got to do that all the time. And then I don't think I scored for like 3 weeks after that. But it was very cool, you know, like not too many guys scored four goals in the game, and I think I was me and Keith Tkachuk for the Coyotes or in the Jets. So it was cool. It would have been nice. I was on fire. I almost blacked out. It was just, everything was perfect. And, you know, like I said, I had two posts, so it could have been really good. But it was just a really fun game, and one that I obviously won't forget.
Do you not kind of think and kind of wish that you could harness kind of that feeling and just kind of bring it up in the future at any point?
Well, that's like, it's funny. I was talking to my wife about it, that, you know, like the good players, you know, I was a good player, but not at that elite level. Obviously I played in the league for a long time, but these elite players do this all the time. Mm-hmm. And like, I always thought of them, like, how do I get in that feeling where you just don't think, and you just, it's so hard. Oh, excuse me. No, excuse my language. It's so hard to do that over and over again. And that's why these guys are so good, is because they can do that. They can find that calmness, that place where it's just, they're having fun. They're just playing. They're not thinking. And that's just really hard to do in professional sports. And that's why, you know, guys like me don't do it very often, and guys like them seem to do a lot.
Yeah, you still end up with, you know, over 800 games in the show, in the National. I mean, we were just talking about this with Myers the other day, because he reached 1,000, and only 400 players in the history of the league have reached 1,000, and you get within 150 games of that. I mean, just to have such a long career, the kind of work that goes into it, how did you manage to continue as long as you did, and how hard did you have to work at it to find things that made you still be able to stay in a lineup later in your career?
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, like, I always looked at the games. I always, you know, obviously a goal, 1,000's the goal. I mean, I was on probably an NHL roster for 1,300 games. I had, quite a few injuries. I had 10 surgeries in my career, a lot of broken, you know, two broken ankles, a lot of broken bones. So I missed a lot of games, you know, breaking my leg and missing a whole season.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, that hurt. But, that, you know, I would have easily got to, you know, 11, 1,200 if, you know, some of those bad injuries I had. But that's just part of the role I played. But for me, like, that's what I knew. I enjoyed the training so much in the off season and getting ready for a season and the grind of it all. And then that last year when I was getting ready to play, it was kind of, something was missing, and I could feel it. And then that next year after I left you guys in Vancouver, and I was considering, I had a couple offers, and I couldn't train though. That's when I knew I was done. Mm. I couldn't get to the gym. I was always an excuse. I didn't want to, I don't know. So I just, that was for me. And then I just decided I'm done, and just, you know, even having a couple offers, I just decided that was it. And that was kind of it. I just knew that my motivation, that compete level, wasn't there, that where it needed to be. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, hey, at some point, there was a career never lasts forever, right? And you had a very long one, and it's pretty amazing that, you know, you still, I mean, for somebody that was drafted, obviously, in the fifth round to, you know, play 869 games, I mean, that is remarkable in and of itself. You were mentioning just a bit earlier about, you know, having that feeling, being, you know, the star players are able to harness, you know, that confidence and just go out there and play. And I'm sure you've heard about Elias Pettersson's struggles in Vancouver over the course of the last little bit, and a lot of the conversation recently has been around a lack of confidence, perhaps, or perhaps him thinking it and worrying too much about the outside noise. And, you know, sometimes you wonder, is that a thing a player kind of lose, a player of that caliber getting in his own head? But is that a thing? Do you believe in that, where sometimes players can just, you know, be their own worst enemy sometimes?
I do. I really do. Yeah. I mean, confidence is so big in the sport. And it, and again, I mean, there's been coaches I've had to be like, I can't give you confidence. You got to get it yourself. And part of that is true. I mean, you can't, you know, at the NHL level, it's a hard league. You got to find your own inner strength and your own confidence to play. But the coach can obviously help that and manage that. And I'm not sure what's exactly going on in his head right now, but, you know, watching, you know, game here and there, he doesn't have the same swagger he does. When he's on, he's having fun. He's making plays. He's not, he almost looks tired because he's so exhausted, probably thinking so much, you know. And that's, again, he's going to jump out of it, obviously. But if I was with him, I'd just be like, just go have some fun. Go play. Let's just, you know, work hard and go play hard. And if you're going to shoot the puck, and you get yourself out of the slump. But I'm sure they're, you know, they got great leadership over there, and talk, and the coaches are, you know, played, I don't know how many games combined. So I'm sure they'll figure it out. And he wants to win. He's a good kid. And I'm sure he'll get out of it.
Did you see a Norris winner in Quinn Hughes when you were a teammate?
I did, yes. I did. I mean, that skating ability and poise with the puck. I've never seen a defenseman, you know, maybe him and, you know, now Kel McCarr, that have so much confidence. We just talked about confidence. Confidence with the puck at the blue line, offensive blue line, with one guy, the last guy, if they lose it, it's a breakaway. They'll make moves. They'll hang on to it for an extra second. They'll cut it back. It's crazy. You just never saw that before. Guys would just rim it back behind the net or chuck it down low, or these guys will make a play and then spin off, and it's really, really impressive. And to see him become a leader like that too, is, I'm sure he's still growing into that role, but it's pretty cool to see.
I'm going to ask you to put your analyst hat on here a little bit, due to the big story of the day after the Oliver Ekman-Larsson reverse hit on Jake Guentzel last night. I mean, what do you make? Okay. I just want to ask you about the hit, because I guess the reverse hits have kind of been getting a little bit more of the spotlight lately. But what do you make of the hit and that kind of a play?
Well, you know, I mean, knowing I play with Oliver a long time as well, so I know I've seen him do that many times.
Yeah.
And I love the play. I don't like it when it happens to me. But, you know, if you really break it down, like, I mean, there was, like, Alex Edler, you guys saw him do that forever, right? Like, you always had to know when Alex Edler was on the ice because he always do that to you. But it really is, it's interference, if you think about it, because the guy hasn't touched the puck yet.
Yeah.
So it really is interference. I've never mind the play. You know, there's ones, like that one last night was, I don't know what Guentzel was, you know, he shouldn't have had his head down reaching for a puck. He put himself in a really bad spot, but it was still a penalty. So I got no problem with it, but it definitely, when you hit someone that hard and we hadn't touched the puck yet, it is interference.
Yeah, and I mean, we see it here too. I mean, Elias Pettersson, we just spoke about him, he throws that hit too, and he was penalized in the playoffs for leaving his feet while doing it too. But I wonder, it's one of those things the league is just trying to get out of the game, perhaps?
Yeah, like I said, though, if you think about it, most of the times it's a guy like going into the forecheck, a defenseman or a forward doing it in the, you know, offensive zone to keep puck possession. It's not really, the guy hasn't touched the puck, so you can't hit a guy without, when he doesn't have the puck, especially. You can give him a bump and protect it, but when you get into like knocking him off his feet and really finishing a guy like that, it is an interference call. So I think if they just called it more as an interference, people would stop doing it.
Hey Brad, we really appreciate the time. We're excited to hear you chirp Obi a little bit more on the Missing Curfew podcast in the future, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. Thanks for this.
All right, guys. Yeah, don't worry, I won't let him off the hook. I'm just kind of giving him a couple shows to get, you know, get a false sense of security, and then I'm going to give it to him. So but I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
There is Brad Richardson joining us here on Canucks Central, and yeah, he's a real beautician, that guy.
Yeah, he's great. He was great. Good insight too. And you know, he mentioned scoring those four goals and how he felt.
Yeah,
that was a great story too about the girlfriend's family coming in and them joking about getting a hat trick, and he gets four.
Yeah, why don't you just go out there and score a hat trick, Brad? Do you guys know how many goals I've scored in my my career? Always a good time. Good stories there from Brad Richardson and the reverse hit. Yeah, that was the big story of the day. And I wonder, because Petey throws that hit a lot. Like, yeah, maybe once a game he throws a reverse hit or one like it. So I wonder if the league is going to crack down on it a little bit more.
Something to keep an eye on here, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you don't call it, Toronto's going to be up in arms.
You know, that's for sure. I mean, it's already happened. All right, we're going to get into the pregame show. Canucks and Chicago Blackhawks. Connor Bedard hosting his hometown team in Chi-Town. That's next on Canuck Central.